You are now tuned in to the Bleed Blue Show. Here are your hosts, Steve Blair and Chris Miles.
Show forward for the fans. I'm your co-host Steven alongside my Bleed Blue partner in crime Chris, and we got New York Yankees Bleed Blue Show analyst Kenny on the line. We'll be doing the Dugout, the podcast. This will not be a live call-in show, but check it out, bleedblueshow.com for the live stream and podcast information. Bleed Blue Show on Facebook, Twitter, and the Instagram. And today we'll be discussing the Yankees spring training, Yankee news, thoughts, and opinions. Gentlemen, what's going on? How y'all doing?
So far, so good, bro. So far, so good. You know, doing the daily grind. And so hopefully, you know, this season will give us something to look at in terms of forward progress, because our other New York teams are just not really responding the way we wanted them to. So let's go back to the oil well. That's what we need to do.
Yes, sir. Kenny, what about you? How you doing?
Doing great. My Rangers are on a roll. Knicks
secured
the win last night in double overtime.
That's right.
Feeling good.
Nice segue, Kenny. Nice segue, man. It's a Bleed Blue Show.
I forgot about that.
Jump off the Yankees. The Rangers, they were coming off that win versus Arizona the other night, 4-3. If you haven't heard Bleed Blue Show, check out the Rink podcast, Archives, iTunes, Podcast Republic, tune in where we discuss the New York Rangers win over the Arizona Coyotes. And on top of that, actually the Blues Day recap on that. Also, you know, the Knicks had the double overtime win last night in Auburn Hills versus the Detroit Pistons. But we gotta, before we continue on with the Giants, the Knicks, RIP Anthony Mason. Chris, I know you have a lot to say. New York Knicks legend Anthony Mason, and Kenny, if you want to chime in. Chris, what's your thoughts on Ant Mason, man?
Hey, man, he was. I can speak for the New York, well, the tri-state area, Connecticut, New Jersey, and New York. He was a giant legend here, a giant legend. He's one of the. I wrote early on the post that he's one of the last real, genuine schoolyard New York ball players. One of the last ones. Well, I'm talking about the stinky sneakers, the netless rims in the schoolyard, you know, type of guys that actually made it all the way to the NBA and at the All-Star game. And so he's kind of a last of the breed kind of guy. What made him a fan favorite is that he played that way, like he was on the playground, that he was in the gym, that he was calling next, you know. And that kind of energy endured. I mean, it was just fantastic for the New York crowd, man. And he played in an era where we were very, very strong as a team. The Knicks were very, very strong as a team. And the Rangers simultaneously were winning at the same time. So mm-hmm. The energy there, anybody that was part of that energy bought into the persona and the characters of the players. And Mace was one of the forerunners of that, those guys. He personified tough basketball. He personified tough work, great defense. But that's on the court. Off the court, man, he did a lot of things that people don't give him credit for. He looked like a mean son of a gun, you know, 6'7", 260 or something like that. But the truth of the matter is that growl and the way he played, but he had a great handle, and he was very good with the community, man. He did a lot for the sports here. You know, he opened up not only basketball, not by himself, but, you know, basically he had a handle on joining the police athletic leagues and the Boys and Girls Clubs and places like that to open up different kind of, you know, just summer sports venues so you know, that the youth can enjoy and stay out of trouble with. And he's just a really good guy. He's very multifaceted, man. You know, he's a good pop. I don't even know what to say, man. I just, you know, I offer, like everybody else, you know, on the Blue Show, you know, our prayers and well wishes for the Mason family, man. He'll be missed. He'll be missed greatly. He really will.
Yes, absolutely. Our condolences to Anthony Mason and his family, the New York Knicks franchise, the family. He was a legendary basketball player. That's who I watched in those mid-90s teams with the New York Knicks. Kenny, do you have any thoughts on that, or as far as Anthony Mason?
A little before my time, but from what I understand, he was a fantastic player on fantastic teams for those Knicks in the 90s. As Chris pointed out, he's just a great human being. It's tragic to see him pass away, and our condolences go out to his family.
Definitely. We won't probably get in more into depth with that on the next fan forum with the Knicks early next week. So tune in for that. And also the New York Football Giants Sunday, 6 p.m., the New York Football Giants, the roundtable discussion will resume. We will have the Extreme Makeover or just fine-tuning episode. I know, Chris, you're looking forward to that.
That just sounds like something on cable, you know?
Yeah. Allow the fans to play armchair GM and speak to the fans as far as how would they construct the team as they will see it tomorrow on March 1st. So they'll have open reign for that. We may even have to extend that episode so people can get their thoughts. So they want to play the armchair GM. So New York Football Giants Sunday, 6 p.m. roundtable. Check us out. So we got some Yankee news a little bit. Masahiro Tanaka, you know, the arm. How's he doing, Kenny, with the arm?
I think he's recovering nicely. I heard news that he's been throwing some 40 pitches the other day. He's about to start throwing some bullpen sessions coming up this week. If all goes according to plans, he should be ready to go for opening day, assuming he's the opening day starter. But then, if all goes according to plans, it's not necessarily going to happen. Hopefully it will. His arm feels healthy. I think he's fully recovered from the partial tear. As long as that holds up, he should be good to go for the whole season. Yep.
Chris, anything as far as Tanaka coming back? Let me ask you this: Do you want him leading off as your lead ace?
Has he taken
that reins over?
Yes, he has. Because I'm an old school guy, so I believe in the person that showed you the most from starter position on concerning your rotation should be the lead guy. I mean, the opening day starter the next year, and to me, he's earned that. I'm sorry about what happened at the end of the year, but for the most of the year, he was the rotation leader. He was the ace. So yes, I truly buy into that. And if he's ready to pitch, you know, and that's another thing. He has a different work ethic. He's not. I don't want to say this. I don't want to paint the broad brush, but most of the Japanese-born players that come over to America don't stay injured for very long. I don't know if you guys ever really noticed that.
Okay.
And the reason for that
good
is
point,
that
good you, point. That's a good point.
They have a different work ethic, you know, and they're taught to believe in, hey, you know, this is an obstacle that needs to be abolished, and you have to move on. And he's one of those guys. And I think he really, truly believes, he does, that it's an honor for him to be the number one starter, at this point anyway, on this particular rotation for this particular historic baseball team. He will be back, and I think he's going to have a strong start, man. I really do. I think that rest probably did him well, and I think he, just like Kenny alluded to, he's responded to everything prescribed to him because he wants to impress again a second straight year to show that he's not a fluke. So yeah, I do agree with that for sure.
Hey, Kenny, how you feel about that with Tanaka just being the lead ace? Pretty much a sign seal for you too, or?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he showed last year that he has what it takes. He mowed guys down for most of the season until he got injured. He showed that he's an elite pitcher in this league, and I think, as Chris pointed out, he's doing everything he's got to do to recover. He's got the proper work ethic. He wants to be the number one starter. I think he's going to go out there and prove it.
Yeah, I am with you guys. I'm totally with you guys. I feel now as far as the bullpen sessions and his arm, I'm not in a rush to get him back at all. Even if they felt that he wasn't ready for opening day. I am still cool with that because the Yankees have invested a lot of money in him, a lot of money to perform at elite starter status, pitching.
Right.
I want him to at least get a full year out of him. And even if that means if we have to restrict him, if we have to not pitch as much with him going into opening day. I am cool with that. This is a marathon. The baseball season is a marathon. Unlike those other sports, the season goes by quick. Where baseball, you have to endure through all types of weather changes outside. You have to go through the cold, especially the Yankees, because they play in the Bronx. You got to go through the cold weather leading up to spring. Summer gets hot and humid. Mm-hmm. They back down to fall. Keep the guys for a long run. Let's bring on Knickerbocker Av. Knickerbocker Av, we were just talking about Masaru Tanaka, his bullpen restrictions, pitching, his arm, his tired arm. What's your thoughts on Tanaka?
I'm really hoping that Tanaka stays healthy and performs similar to what he did last year, if not make improvements. I know he just pitched 40. He had 40 pitches in his last session, pain-free. I'm pretty sure that they're going to give him an innings restriction or a pitch restriction, for the early onset. But depending on how he does in spring training and then the early part of the season, I'm sure they'll probably lift it off and hopefully without a hitch, without any pain, without any issues, without any injury. So I just hope that Tanaka really, can maintain for the entire 162 games.
Well, how many
What's up,
pitches?
I'm sorry.
What's up, boss? How you doing, man?
for all you guys on the line, how many pitches in the session would you think? Would it be 40, 45? You put them up to 50. How much would you give him at the state with his arm?
I would keep him at 40 for now and then, slowly elevate it. Since he's saying it's pain-free, slowly elevate it. If 40, if he's doing good at 40, let's go to 60. If he's doing good at 60, then let's go to 80. And then if 80, then, for a little bit, do simulated games, simulated bullpen sessions and see how that works. You want him to get as high as, no more than 105, 110 pitches, per outing. But, hey, if he can, go 120 to 130 like some of, the really big workhorses like CeCe did back in the day, then by all means, that'd be great. But you don't really want to tax that arm so much.
Hey, Kenny, how many pitches for you for Tanaka?
I think you start him off now. You keep him at the 40. You build him up, as Knickerbocker Av said. You build him up through the course of spring training. Maybe at the start of the season you don't throw him more than – 95 or 100, but as the season progresses, as long as there's no pain, he can go as many as he needs to get the win. I think by the end of the year he should be able to throw as many as he needs.
Okay, and Chris, are you in the same boat with the guys?
I'm totally with the fellas on this one. Particularly since I think about a week ago I saw, I don't know what program it was, but it was definitely Larry Rothschild, the pitching coach. He was saying that they're thinking about kind of incorporating like a six-man rotation. They're playing with that idea. And I'm like, okay, if you're gonna do that, then obviously the genesis of that thought is really monitoring pitch counts. And I think that Tanaka's part of that process. So I would, to go to the original question. Yeah, start him off at 40. Don't try to make him pitch at full speed or pull out his whole arsenal, and just really monitor him, man. Really monitor him and see where it comes from there. Get his stamina built up and see what happens. So I'm with the fellas on that one. Yeah.
Now, as far as the six-man rotation, we kind of touched on that last week, and we could get into a little bit more depth with that. And I understand that point, what you just said, Chris. Logically, that would make sense protecting the pitches. But here's the issue I have with that six-man rotation, because – when you do that and you play against teams within your division who are bringing out their horses versus your fourth or fifth man star, because every
That's
time you start with a
right.
six man, every time you do that, you go into a new series pretty much not one versus a three or two versus a four or five. That could really kind of hurt you in a way. How do you guys think about that six-man rotation? We'll start with Kenny.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you're going to have six men in the rotation, you have to have six good starters. I don't know if the Yankees really have that. I understand what the thought process is. It gives guys a little more time off to make sure they don't get injured. But at the same time, winning is still important. And I don't know how many games you're going to win with a six starter against a one or two from the opponent. It's a thought. I'm not really sure if it was worth though in practice.
And Knickerbocker, what's your thoughts on that six-man rotation as far as the pros and the cons with it?
Well, the pros is that if you start off with a six-man rotation and all six pitchers are, you know, wheeling and dealing, as Clyde would say, and are basically just, you know, shutting everything down, you then afford yourself a very high trade piece when it comes to the trading deadline, and then you can use that additional pitcher come, you know, for, you know, in case you need a slugger, if you need a fielder, if you need, you know, whatever your case, whatever your needs may be at that given point. So it's a benefit in the early onset, but when it comes down to past the trading deadline, when you start getting into the later months like August, September, and even into October, the longer you have pitchers, you know, sitting out and waiting, it ends up becoming, you know, your Achilles heel. So it's good for the early onset, but once the trade deadline is done and you're starting setting up your playoff rotation and the playoff pennant race rotation, you want to keep it down to five, even four starters at times. That's how I see it.
Yeah,
I totally agree with that thought. Totally. Now, to his defense, he said he wants to do it for like 30 games beginning in April, just to see how it'll go. So maybe, but still, it's an experimental process. Some of these guys, you never know who's going to come out, you know, in our division. Like, for instance, I'm thinking of the Orioles. You never know who's going to come out with a bang that you're going to play catch up with all year, you know? And that's another added issue. So I don't know. You're right. During the pennant race, you don't need a mix up like that. You need to have a solid rotation that you know you're going to put out there that will be, you know, because the pitcher wants to know when exactly is he going to get his turn. You know, you can factor in the rain outs and all this other kind of stuff, and you really want to be ready when it's time. And if your time doesn't come up, well, when they put you out there, say, and you're kind of off schedule, quote unquote, you haven't pitched in 2 weeks or something like that because of the six man rotation. Well, damn, you're not gonna be at your best, and that also might hurt your free agent status. So it's a lot of little things involved in here. It's intricate. It's tricky. But I don't know. It's also kind of admitted that he doesn't have anybody at 100%. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's kind of a slippery slope here, dude. I know why they're doing it. Like Kenny said, I get it in theory, but in practice, it just makes sense. So we'll see.
Yeah, I totally understand as far as that's another aspect that you brought up, Chris, free agency. What about the current pitchers on the roster? Are they even buying into a six-man rotation? Because when you got things like personal contracts, your clauses, your incentives to get so many wins and starts and innings pitch, that's the key, innings pitch. And when you slice it with another starter over a 162-game season, somebody's going to be missing out on incentives. That's going to just want the guy to say, hey, I'm good with this.
You've already got Nova out till May, you know. So what are you starting with? You starting with Tanaka, Panada, Sabathia. Who's next?
Capuano.
Starter,
and Nathan Eovaldi.
Nathan Eovaldi. Yeah, matter of fact, I'm glad you guys brought that up. You know, the CC Sabathia reported in the camp, the 305 pounds, you know, put that weight back on. Now, here's the thing. You know, I was on here with the Blues Day recap a couple of nights ago, and I mentioned how are we going to get the old CC back? It's kind of like Big Luther. You know, Chris, you already know Big Luther, Little Luther.
It's good. Bad Oprah, young thin Oprah.
What an analogy.
Yeah, are we going to get that type of performance back, or going get back to OCC now he's putting back on the way? Because I remember I said this on the recap a couple of nights ago. With CC Sabathia, he said in an interview a couple of years ago that he felt that he was going to be more durable with putting off the weight, and obviously that was not the case. No, Kenny, now how you feel about CC Sabathia coming back, putting it on the weight? What are your expectations with CC heading into spring training with the weight? What are you looking to see with these spring training games in Florida?
You know, I like the fact that he put the weight back. I think he understands that he lost a lot of velocity on his fastball when he lost that weight. He just couldn't get as much behind it. You know, putting the weight back on gives him the best chance to return to form when he was like, 2008, 2009, right there in the height of his career. The knee problems worry me a little bit, but it's not the landing knee that gives him the trouble. So I'm not too worried about that. That'll be okay. I like the fact that he put the weight back. I think he thought about it, and he realizes this is the best way to go about winning some games this year. As far as expectations, spring training, I think he's just going to make sure that his knees hold up, he stays healthy. And as you enter the year, I think anything over, if he pitches the whole year, I think that would be a success, to be honest. As far as wins and stuff like that, it's not super important. Maybe 16 wins, you know, keep the ERA under 3.5, that would be great. But I think pitching the whole year would just be a success at this point.
Yep. No. Big fucker F.
CC, big CC. I'm happy to see it. I'm happy the pinstripes, the additional pinstripes on his jersey are back. I kind of missed them. It made me feel a little bit better when I heard he was at 305. Made me feel better about myself as a big brother myself. But on that note, when he reported to camp last season, I think he was, a 275 or 260 something? And then his velocity was at, 89 to 87 or something like that. And then they come to find out that it was his knee. And I know something was wrong when he tried to lose the weight so he can alleviate some of the pain off of that knee and then ended up having to have knee surgery anyway. Now that CC's coming kind of back to his natural form and he'll be able to, kind of feel himself back to his old ways, his old workhorse ways. Because remember back in the day, Big CC didn't get warmed up till after 80 pitches. He would just keep going. I'm really hoping that we do get the Big CC, the big workhorse that'll eat up 220, 230 innings for the season. Hopefully he stays healthy and, and who knows, maybe come back to Cy Young form because that would be a big boost to his rotation.
That'd be great.
And Chris, what about you?
I don't trust it at all. I don't trust him coming back big again like that because I don't know what kind of big that is. Is that fat? Is that solid muscle? Is there any breath behind that? What kind of girth is it? He's wearing a brace under his uniform now. He had a whole winter of plasma injections constantly. I'm not sure about that. I know what he used to look like. I'm totally with the Big CC perception of what he's supposed to look like in those pinstripes. But is that really what you're going to get now? I don't know. This is a wait and see for me. He had right knee surgery. How's that gonna affect his delivery? What about his mechanics? I'm just not feeling that right now. So it's a wait and see for me. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, but I'm looking at it from the from the age standpoint and the athletic standpoint. Is he going to still be that 18 win 3.01 230 guy, 9 strikeout guy? I'm not sure. ERA is what I meant, 2.31. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm really on the fence about that right now. I really can't trust that. And also the way he went out the last two seasons, with a huff and puff. And I'm just on the fence about him right now.
I will give him the benefit of the doubt. Chris, I'm with you as far as you want to look at the things from a totality perspective. Knowing how you think, you like to look at both sides of the coin, pros and cons, and I can understand the pessimistic side, and I'm with you on that. I also, knowing how CC Sabathia, he's been in the league since, a good 2001. He's pitched over 200 innings at least a good 8 times. And then even if he didn't pitch over 200 innings, He came close to 200 innings pitched another 3 to 4 times, in the 180, 190 innings pitched range. I think last season was probably an anomaly. I think he's capable to give us that workhorse mentality, that workhorse starts. I think he could give us 200. Now, I think sometimes – and he's been pretty much healthy all his career for the most part.
He has been.
Huh?
He has been. That's my concern. He has been healthy for most of his career.
Yeah, I just
don't know if I'm going to get that guy as a fan. I want to go to Yankee Stadium and I want to see CC perform.
Yeah.
And am I going to get that CC from 2009? I certainly hope so.
Oh, that'd be great. That would be great. And he's been very durable as a big guy anyway, whether he was Cleveland, Milwaukee, when he came to the Yankees. I give him the benefit of the doubt. I think, you know, when you get to that age,
too.
He's like 32, 33, huh?
Right. I will, too, because, see, the what he's doing, okay, we talked earlier about, we gave Tanaka props for doing all the right things in terms of rehab and bringing yourself back. So I'm not going to congratulate Tanaka and dog out CeCe for doing kind of the same thing. But I'm trying to, and this is a question I have. This is a question I have, and I think it's mostly for Kenny or Nickabaco or anybody in the forum.
Sure.
What kind of pitching, what kind of situation did Tanaka have in Japan where he didn't get hurt and he performed well all those seasons, and as opposed to what happened last year?
It's a great question.
What kind of history does the guy have?
Great question.
Because I'm wondering about that.
Kenny, what's your thoughts on that? Kenny, and then go Nickabaca, and I'll answer.
You know, I don't think it was all that different. Maybe he didn't pitch as many games, but he threw the same variety of pitches. He still threw that hard splitter and the fastball.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he did much different. Maybe it was just the luck of the draw. You know, he shows up and this is what happens. But I don't really see that much of a difference between the type of baseball they're playing there. Like all they're playing here. And I don't think there's one reason you can point to and say this is why he got injured in New York.
Okay.
And Nickabaca.
All right.
I'm not familiar too much with what he did in Japan, for the exception of the highlights that I have seen. So I can't really speculate. All I know is that this year, he's not going to be a surprise. People know that he can, he can throw 95 plus. He has that devastating splitter. He has different arm slots and angles. So we're gonna see. So maybe the batter's mentality is just to challenge him and make him throw additional pitches and get him to his bullpen. Because so far, I don't think he's thrown more than what 90 pitches in a game, maybe 100. Teams like the Red Sox, teams like the Rays, and especially within our division where, you know, guys like to sit on a lot of pitches and fight off pitches and get deep pitch counts within at-bats, you're going to see those guys, those teams really, really, test Tanaka and see if he can go into the 120, 130s and still, go 6 or 7. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I'm with you both, Kenny and Nickabaca. As far as Tanaka in Japan, I think he's pitched against lesser competition. I think Major League Baseball has the best hitters in the world, no doubt, because you got everything in the Major League Baseball. You got from all walks of life. Now, as far as Tanaka, like Kenny says, I think it was just pure bad luck the way both pitches went down. I really do, man. There was nothing beforehand as far as their injury history that was predictable as far as those guys going down. I think Sabathia could give us something. I really feel that Tanaka could give us something coming back. He may not be as dominant, and if he is as dominant as he when he first came to the Yankees last season, man, we got a lot to look forward to. I don't even expect to see all that as far as how dominating he was mowing down pitchers up into the All-Star break. Now, let me ask you guys this. The 1 and 2 guys, Sabathia and CeCe, how confident are you guys on their durability, their expectations as a 1-2 starter combination in the AL East? Kenny, how you feel if these guys hold up? How successful would the Yankees be in their throughout the AL East in 2015?
I think if they hold up, they'll be fairly successful at keeping the Yankee rotation in line. They'll keep it going all the time. However, that's another one of those ifs that we talked about last week. There's no guarantee they will hold up. CeCe's probably more of a question mark than Tanaka, just because of his history with injury. But if they were to hold up, then I think Yankee rotation will be a lot better than people say it's going to be at this point.
Knickerbocker.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear the question. What was it again? I'm sorry.
If Tanaka and CeCe hold up, how effective can the starter pitching be in the AL East versus Baltimore, Boston, Toronto, Tampa?
You're looking at two stoppers right there. You're looking at if you're Tampa Bay, Boston, the Blue Jays, or what have you. If you're playing the Yankees and you draw Tanaka and or CeCe, or you get them back to back, you're in for a fight. For a dogfight of an at bat, no matter what you're doing, no matter what situation. I mean, the only benefit that they have this now is that there isn't a Mariano Rivera at the end of it. But if they just slice you up and only get to like 80 or 90 pitches and you're at the top of the ninth, at home or at Yankee Stadium, you're in trouble. Because these guys, you got CeCe's devastating hook, you got Tanaka's crazy splitter, and then, of course, they both can still crank it up, at 95 apiece. So if that happens, division champs.
There you go.
Ah, nice.
They're one of the best pitching duels in baseball if they hold up.
Yeah, you're looking at like up a Scherzer Verlander kind of combination there.
Yes, exactly.
Almost.
Exactly. You're potentially looking at 36 wins right there. So
yeah.
I mean, I'm putting it on a curve. So yeah, that's if they hold up. Should they hold up, and I'm trying to be as positive as I can here, then. Yeah, then we've got something to look forward to. And another thing, from a teammate's perspective, with them holding up that way, I mean, just winning and just tearing teams up in the division like that, that will encourage the other people once they come back. You never know how Nova will look when he'll get back and the other two starters. So it's going to be a plus, and it'll definitely work for Giraldi, who's like Captain Hook, sometimes when he's. Managing this bullpen. So, by the way, Knickerbocker Ave, is Betances related to you?
I was always wondering that.
I was wondering
about that.
I get that a lot. Anytime I post something, something Yankee related, they're like, dude, can you call your cousin or something? I'm like,
remote.
If I ask my grandmother, yes, we are, because anybody with our last name is related to me. However, to be perfectly honest, I honestly don't know. There's a very good chance that he is. I mean, he and I are more or less, from the same areas, the same, migrating circles. But I've never met him. That's the crazy part, and I don't know who he's related to in my family, if he is, but I am still looking for it. Because my last name is not like one of those. Betances is not like a name that you hear all the time. So whenever I find out there's another Betances out there, I'm like, are we kin? just so we're making sure.
That's a good question, Chris, because I was wondering the same thing. And it was my mind, too. Now, how do you guys feel as far as is CeCe going to get somewhat of a restriction too? Are they going to slowly work him back? Is they going to do Tanaka to a degree? Although you haven't really heard a lot of reports as far as that, because CeCe's coming off the season in the injury, and now he got the weight gain. Kenny, what about CeCe and his pitch count per se?
I don't think it's super important that they restrict him just because of the nature of the injury. It's a knee injury, not an arm injury. Mm-hmm. So as long as they really restrict it when it's like an elbow or a shoulder thing. But given the fact that it's just a knee, I don't think it's too important that they keep his pitch count low. I think it's the proper physical therapy and he'll be okay with as many pitches as he needs to throw.
All right. You feel the same way Knickerbocker have and Chris?
I do. I'm kind of in the same boat with him.
I'm very much the same boat, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I know you guys heard the news with the Red Sox getting a Cuban shortstop, Mercado, and the Yankees kind of not having their bid up, you know, falling out by for a couple minutes. Are you guys disappointed for not getting Johan Mercado from the Cuban shortstop? Kenny, what's your thoughts as far as when that development happened earlier in the week?
I have a few thoughts about this. One, I'm a little upset because he would be another great young guy to have in the system, which we don't no longer have the opportunity to see play for us. But at the same time, it's a lot of money to spend on a 19-year-old, $63 million with the taxes, what the Red Sox ended up paying.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money for not a guaranteed star. And we're not going to see him for a few years. He'll be in the minor league system, supposedly, maybe till the end of next year, just so he can develop into a major league player. I'm not super upset about that.
Okay.
So I'm a little indifferent, ultimately, about the whole situation. Would like to have him, but I'm not super upset that we didn't get him.
So you believe that Boston overpaid for him?
A little bit in the long run. I think if it was just a $31.5 million, it'd be okay. But with the taxes on top of that, I mean, that's a lot of money to sell out. That's a lot of money.
Yep.
And Knickerbocker, what's your thoughts?
I was upset at first until Kenny reported on his page what the Red Sox paid, and I'm thinking to myself, well, if the Yankees aren't willing to outspend the Red Sox on that end, then there's got to be something. There's got to be a good reason. Brian Cashman is no dummy. He's not going to just throw out the money out there just for the shits and giggles in this case. So the $63 million plus all the taxes that the Red Sox are paying, I mean. They overspent. They did absolutely overspend on him. And only thing I can say is there is a number of different players, out there in the past, especially with those two teams, the Yankees and the Red Sox, where we know that overpaying doesn't always work. Hideki Irabu, Jose Contreras. I mean, we can go on and on. There's a number. So I think the Red Sox are really taking a huge bid on that one, and they're taking a huge risk.
And Chris, what's your thought?
Okay, my question is, who are the other finalists for this guy, for this kid's services?
I think the Dodgers and the Angels were involved. And I think
New York and L.A., baby. New York and L.A.
So this kid had a very high profile at 19 years old, huh?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, usually their scouts, a lot of times those scouts, they migrate together. If you see one Yankee scout, there's a Red Sox scout that's too far away, and a Dodgers scout that's probably behind them.
Where is he from? Is he from the Dominican Republic?
He's from Cuba.
He's from Cuba? That means Louis Tiant's involved in this, isn't it?
And a little, no, Tiant is a Dominican.
When a Red Sox normally signs for Cuban players, Louis Tiant's always there somewhere. I don't know. Anyway, let me put it this way. I think the kid is a Robinson Cano type, and I think that's what they're looking at. I think with better speed, and I'm not going to give him the – I'm not going to say he has better positional versatility because I think what they were looking – what they're strictly looking at here is they're gambling on the kid's upside. And that's never good. And, yes, just like you guys talked about, factoring in the minor league play and the instructional play he'll have to do. I don't know if it's a good investment yet. Not yet. I don't know what kind of surefire, and I'm putting this in quotation marks, surefire phenom he is supposed to be at this point. Okay? So I don't know. Am I upset? No, I'm not. But also, I have to go back on something, Knickerbocker Ave, you just said about Cashman. I think he and the Steinbrenner brothers are less aggressive than they were during the time when his father was alive.
Right.
Okay? I don't think they go after it. I don't think they send in advanced scouting teams out there. There used to be five or six Yankee, I can speak for Cano. There were five or six scouts on him at one time from the same organization.
Mm-hmm.
When Steinbrenner was around. See, and Steinbrenner went for it like that, which was unconventional then and probably now, but all I know is the family doesn't work that way anymore. So I wonder if we're missing something. I wonder if the Red Sox has gone ahead and stole our thunder and used our formula to do these things. Because they're spending like cats and dogs up in Boston now. Mm-hmm. Before we were the evil empire, and now all of a sudden they've become, you know, the Trumpsters. You know what I mean? So I don't really know what's going on there. But I do know that in order for us to compete, we're going to have to be a little bit more aggressive than most teams, particularly that one up in Boston, man, who we have a long-standing feud with. Because if they're going to get the best players, of course we have to do a little bit more, you know, background and what have you on these personnel that they're signing. But if they're going to go ahead and get the best finalists this way, I think we need to rethink our process or use another approach. That's what I'm thinking.
See, I'm 100% in agreement with you, Chris. I don't believe that Hal and Hank are as aggressive as they were as you know when George was still around, or even when George was still running the team. I mean, for a number of years now, we're always talking about they want to get under a minimum. They want they're giving themselves a maximum amount of payroll. They want to get under a certain number. They want to save on the luxury tax and this, that, and the third. These guys are dollars and cents guys. They're not baseball guys. I don't think they have the same passion for baseball that their dad definitely did. Because, I mean, their dad, George, was a Lion. He was known as one of the last Lions of baseball. That's actually the name of one of his books.
That's right.
It's a great read. It's like he's the last Lion of baseball. And the kind of upbringing that George had as in comparison to what his sons have, I mean – it's completely night and day. You got from a guy who went from like a grungy old style, you know, dad was an overbearing military bastard, as opposed to, you know, these guys are all prep school kids and you know they're spoiled to death. So I'm looking at it like this. I'm in 100% agreement with Chris. The Steinbrenners are not the same Steinbrenner that we are accustomed and used to. And we all miss and love.
Give it
all his faults.
I was going to say, really? As far as I wanted the shortstop to a degree, but I think if the Red Sox is willing to pay that keep away Yankees tax, hey, let that be the Red Sox money, and hopefully their investment flips on them. That's number one. I kind of wanted the guy kind of invest in the future to a degree. But if it's going to cost us too much in the Wallace and Hank and Hal is not with it, I could kind of ride with that. Now, number two, you guys was hitting on it, Chris and Knickerbocker, Evan Kenny. Do you think the fan base, the Yankee fan base, are embracing Hal and Cashman now with the penny pension to a degree, trying to get back to that minimum? Because you know how the Yankees were with overpay means playoff appearances. Playoff appearances means you have a shot at World Series titles. That was kind of philosophy as I can known for pretty much Steinbrenner every his whole existence as an owner. But do you think the fans is embracing this approach, Kenny? And then we go with Knickerbocker, Av, and Chris.
I can't speak for all fans, but personally, I appreciate what they're trying to do. They're trying to not spend so much money and still create winning teams, which I think is a better way to go about being successful. I think a lot of other fans think the same way. They appreciate it, but there's also that other group of fans who say, no, we got to do what George did to win these games, what the boss did. We went out, we bought the superstars, we bought the veterans, and that's how we won. Personally, I don't think that's such a great it's not a great method anymore because guys are getting younger, more athletic. But I don't know. I like the way they're running the team, though. I just don't think they have as much invested as George Steinbrenner did. Hank and Hal don't have as much invested in the team winning, but I think they're trying to show what they do. So we'll see.
How you feel, Knickerbocker?
I understand the method in you know, cutting salary, and then every now and then they'll throw a curveball at you and they sign Jacoby Ellsbury for, you know, 100-something million. I like it, but I don't think every Yankee fan appreciates it, and with good reason. The fact is, the Yankees have missed the playoffs 2 years in a row now. Yankee teams, you know, haven't been the Bronx Bombers. They haven't been any semblance of the former Yankee teams that have been in the playoffs every year, that have been competing for a championship, and more or less have been selling out Yankee Stadium almost every given night. I mean, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but Yankee Stadium is getting emptier and emptier, and it's not just because of the ticket prices. It's because the team is doing poorly. And so there has to be, in my opinion, there has to be more of a balance in between, you know, investing, you know, good money in good quality players, and then at the same time, you know, then also they have to replenish the farm, because, you know, there was a good 6-year span where everybody was in the farm system was shipped out, and now they're all superstars elsewhere.
Right.
So, you know, there has to be a more delicate balance, and I don't think they're – I mean, I think Cashman is trying to do that, but I don't think the Steinbrenners are also you know, they're not giving him the amount of leeway that I think he needs. Or maybe they is, and this is something we don't understand, we don't know. We don't know how hands-on the fiscally responsible Steinbrenners are now, as opposed to how – we all know how George was. Mm-hmm. So there has to be that delicate balance.
Right. George Steinbrenner was a military-educated shipbuilder, okay?
Yep.
So he only had tough bosses. He only saw his upbringing, period, is that of aggressiveness. Let's get it done. Let's build now. Let's no holds barred. Forget the budget. We'll fix it later. Let's put this on the stage right now. He was that guy, you know? And that, no matter how you hated him, no matter what he said about players, no matter how he dealt with the media, no matter what you felt about him and his relationship with Billy Martin, it didn't matter. One thing's for sure, the guy was a proven winner, and he knew how to handle a product, in this case, the New York Yankees. And the Yankees have sold out that Yankee Stadium for, I don't know, it's got to be close to 30 years up until the last 2 or 3 years, you know? You're right. Angel's right on button. It's not as full as it used to be. Why? Because the interest isn't there like it used to be. The only time the interest heightened is when Mariano was doing Boston was there, or Mariano was doing his, and Jeter were doing their last go-round, and Andy were doing their last go-round. And that made for heightened interest, you know? But see, there's other little quirks in it. Another big night that they had a couple of years ago was when Godzilla came back with the Angels, I think he was, you know, and everybody came out to see him. Why? Because the fans generally love the baseball team that was put together by the old regime. I'm not really sure about these guys in terms of, I know Cashman knows better. He's been there for a long time, and he understands what's expected of this franchise. And one of the things that he knows for sure, and then you get to, every time you go to Yankee Stadium, you're always going to get some kind of historic feel about it. You know, whether you go past the rooms, you see all the pictures, you see whatever, the monuments out in outfield, there's a feel of, there's a strong traditional feel there. You know, when you have a Derek Jeter go down, you're supposed to have a replacement for him as a Yankee captain. You don't get rid of Cano, no matter what the monetary situation is. You have to feel, you have to have a feel for the Yankee tradition. And I don't know if these guys, just like Angel just said, I'm not really sure if these guys have that baseball quote-unquote background, okay, where they understand that the fan base is more familiar with what's out there than they are many times. And they have to feed into the community to get, you know, some kind of almost focus group feel to find out what the hell is really required for this team to win. Well, we're in a tough division too. All of these teams can play, you know, and we don't want to lose it to Toronto's of the world. It doesn't make any sense to win a season, a weekend series with Boston to turn around and lose to Toronto 3 games in a row, you know, because now you're back. Because you're not enthused anymore. So you also, so this actually, so the Yankees actually belong to the fans. And the fans to, in order to please, and Steinbrenner knew that. He knew that. That's why he always tried to keep a winning team on the field. Didn't know it wasn't always pretty. There's some crazy moments out there in the history of this, you know, of the relationship with Steinbrenner and the Yankees, but it always kind of worked. And I hope these guys realize that they have to use their father's approach in this day and age, especially since there's no salary cap, in order to achieve that again. That's just my look at it, man. That's just my take.
Yeah, I'm gonna piggyback off that, Chris. As you know, have you been a Yankee fan as long as you have? I know you can remember how I remember reading up on those documentaries and studying the history of the Yankees years back when I was a kid. Basically, Steinbrenner took over the team back in the early '70s when the Yankees were pretty much on the decline after the Mantle teams. Also, CBS was struggling, and like Angels or Knickerbocker has said, pretty much. Coming into with a team of partners, pretty much being that lion, being a very aggressive, taking ownership of everything. Where just because you're a Steinbrenner through genetics, through birth, you know, Hank and Hal, you know, they're more penny pinchers. They're not their father. They're not as aggressive. That's just two different animals. They're just two different personas, two different mentalities. I don't even know if that. The penny pension, even if it did work, it probably would take another few years to actually get it into full rotation to fruition as far as where the Yankees need to be, because they got to kind of get out of that. The sluggers that are presently on the roster right now are due to George Steinbrenner, due to that type of ideology, not because of more of a Hank and Hal thing. Because A-Rod, they're going to overpay for an A-Rod because that's what Steinbrenner wants. Steinbrenner gets. I'm talking about George. But Hank and Hal, it seems like, you know, Kenny, we'll come back to you with this. But the penny pitching, how effective would it be for the next couple of years, knowing that we have teams in the division who are willing to put up the money to get these players and overpay for them, i.e. the Red Sox, who are being dubbed Evil Empire 2.0? That's crazy to me, man.
Yeah.
The Yankees are currently trying to build up their farm system. So for the next few years, I don't think the penny pinching is going to be a huge problem. You know, the young guys, they don't charge as much. They don't cost as much. So guys like Aaron Judge or Greg Bird or Rob Refsnyder, Yankees aren't going to need to shell out that much money to sign them to major league deals. So ultimately, the cheapness of the Steinbrenner isn't going to be that big of a deal. But people still don't really like that just because of the way the Yankees used to be run. So people are going to think it's worse than it is. But personally, I don't think it's that big of a problem.
Okay. Knickerbocker, what's your thoughts on the whole ideology between father and sons as far as running the team? And is this going to work for the next couple of years? It has to work, correct? The Yankees are going to really – it's going to be bad for them, right? Knickerbocker Ave.
It has to work for them.
Okay.
Sorry about that. I had you guys on mute for a second. The fact is that this penny pinching, it'll work for now, considering that all the big major league sluggers out there, you know, the Cabreras, the Hamiltons, the Pujols, and so on, and the Stantons and stuff like that, those guys are going to be locked up for, you know, 10 to 15 years from now. So when the next crop of big megastars, you know, that are, you know, great for bashing the ball and for, you know, fielding and for everything, for all their talents, when those guys become free agents, that's when I think you'll see the Yankees be like, you know what, it's go time. And then that's when the spending spree. So I think they're waiting for guys like, you know, like the Bryce Harpers, I don't see Giancarlo Stanton ever becoming a free agent again. He'll probably get traded, but he's locked up for the next 13 years. I've never heard of that.
You think that was too much, Knickerbocker Ave?
Oh my God, that's a little bit too much. and see, that's the kind of thing. That's the kind of the reason why Cano left. Cano wanted to stay here for 10 years. It wasn't the money issue; it was the time. It was the length of the contract. Right. They offered him 7 years at 170 something, and he wanted 10 years, 240, and that's what he wanted. That's what he got. And That's the reason why Cano's not here. I'm pretty sure that George would have probably said, you know what, how about you just stay here for 10 years and 200 and we'll call it even. Mm-hmm. I think George is more of a negotiator than, you know, than Hal and Hank. You know, those guys are, you know, penny pinchers. They're finance guys. So the penny pinching, it's good to be a struggle for the next couple of years. But once you start seeing the young superstars like the Harpers, the Stantons, you know, and so on and so forth, once you start seeing those guys hit the free agent market, I guarantee you they will be Yankees. And they will be overpaid, like, ridiculously.
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Chris, anything else that happened to Steinbrenner, the legacy from, you know, George passing on to hanging out? Because you see this developed over years. So what's your thoughts as far as the ideologies between both?
You know what? Knickerbocker have put it on a button, man. These guys don't believe. I don't think they believe in that kind of financial, how do I want to say this? That kind of financial savvy. They don't see it. They don't understand. You know what? Put it this way. They basically don't understand why you would have to pay, why a baseball player from another country who is just a baseball player. He didn't go to MIT like I did. He didn't go to Berkeley like I did. Needs to be paid $120 million over 10 years or 7 years or whatever, you know, to play baseball for us. Maybe Dad didn't do this right. That's what I think their thinking is consists of, you know. But see, this is baseball's different. Baseball is not a sport where no one's really concerned about profit here. What you're concerned because you're going to get profit because profit sharing is prevalent in actually all the sports, you know, with football being on top of it. But, you know, no one's concerned about making money. What you're concerned about is competing. When you compete, the money's going to come to you anyway. You know, now you're going to hear a lot of stuff about, oh, well, the Kansas City Royals, they went to the World Series last year on a small budget. But the truth of the matter is they may have had a very small capital to work with, but the truth of the matter is just by television revenue and exposure alone, they were going to get it back anyway. And all of them understand that. So I'm surprised that the Steinbrenner brothers or Brian Cashman or both, I don't know how this is working, don't know that aspect of it or don't care about it or choose to ignore it. I don't know what they're doing. But the truth of the matter is, in order for the New York Yankees, I'm not going to talk about Tampa Bay or Kansas City or San Diego. In order for the New York Yankees to show out the best they can, they have got to spend money. And that precedence was set by Mr. Steinbrenner in 1973, and it's been going on ever since that way. And also to backtrack real quick, I'm going to say it for a few seconds, something you said earlier, I think, Steve, I think you might have said it. When Steinbrenner bought this team, there was a team of guys with him. He was the majority owner, but he didn't really. He said at the press conference, and I remember this as a kid, that he wasn't going to mess with this team, and he meant it. But he had about five or six guys that couldn't handle themselves: Paley, Mike Burke, Gay Paul. All of them would bicker and argue and about. And this is pre-free agency, you know. And the players started complaining to Steinbrenner, and that's why Steinbrenner wiped the slate, got rid of everyone, and took over. And once he did it, the Yankees kind of flew there for a minute. The 70s, and then, of course, there was a hiccup in the 80s with the Nixon thing, and then all that kind of stuff. But the truth of the matter is, that's the way he handled this team. And I guess he's at fault for not really teaching, passing that legacy on. You know, it's almost like watching an episode of Empire with him and his son, you know.
Yeah.
What should have happened was he should have taught and his daughter the inner workings of how to manipulate the rest of the baseball community by having the Yankees continue to be that empire. But he really didn't do that, and that just wasn't his style, so we can't go back on that. The best thing to do is just like Knickerbocker have said, hopefully when these guys start looking around for elsewhere to get paid and get their paychecks as free agents, I mean, what they feel they're worth, they'll show up here in the Bronx.
All right, no doubt. We got about 30 seconds. Kenny, can you tell everybody how
to
find you
for
your website?
Oh, you can find my articles at my website, www.newyorkyankeestalk.wordpress.com, or the links on my Facebook page, New York Yankees Talk. Thank you.
All right, and Knickerbocker Ave, I know we'll probably get into some Anthony Mason talk on the next fan forum. How to find you real quick?
Yep.
You can find me on Facebook at Knickerbocker Ave. Rest in peace, the great legend, Anthony Mason. He's got
Chris, any
soon.
Final thoughts for the Yankees? Or
no, let's keep hitting it. Just hey, bleed blue, that's all we can do, baby.
All right, man. Check us out, iTunes Podcast, and tune in. We're going to get cut off. Thanks for this show for the Yankees. Take care, everybody. Bleed blue.
Ciao.
Bleed blue, 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 bleed blue.